Well, hello there, my friends, and welcome back. My name is Stephanie Safarian, and you're listening to episode 510 of Sustainable Minimalists. This is a listener-supported show about intentional and eco-friendly minimalist living. And on today's show, we are examining the differences between the ways in which America tends to view the natural world versus how Nordic countries prioritize the natural world. Waste no time syndrome is what happens when parents engineer every moment of their child's life for productivity, for cognitive development. And here in America, we prioritize productivity, yes, but also hitting those academic benchmarks very, very early in life, don't we? I mean, the popularity of those baby Einstein products for actual babies really hits this point home. But not all cultures prioritize productivity and intellectual development in the, dare I say, extreme ways that Americans do. And Scandinavian parents tend to be a bit more free range. They focus on getting outside, especially during childhood, because our Nordic friends believe that the natural world gives children and adults everything we need. Now, here to help me break down such major differences in cultures is author Linda McGurk. She is the author of many books, many popular books. You've likely heard of them, including There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather, A Scandinavian Mom's Secrets for Raising Healthy, Resilient, and Confident Kids. She's also the author of The Open Air Life, Discover the Nordic Art of Frulisliv. Today, we are talking about nature and its countless positive effects on child development, yes. But please know for the non-parents listening, there's plenty of goodness for adults as well. And quick word before we get into it. After listening today, if you learned something, if you gained a takeaway that you can use in your own life to enrich your life, please consider supporting this work for just $5 a month, either via Substack or Apple Podcasts. The links are in the show notes. I cannot continue. I just cannot continue without your support. Thank you so much for considering. Linda, so thrilled to have you on the show. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. I'm really excited to talk to you about the outdoors, making our lives, making our children's lives more open air, to use a phrase that you use. But before we do that, I'd love to know more about you. Who are you? What do you do? And how did you find yourself being a passionate advocate for the open air life?
Yeah. So I've done a lot of podcast interviews over the years, and I always get that question. So tell us a little bit about yourself. And I always think it's like the hardest question because I wear a lot of different hats and it seems like I only take on more roles over the years. But to keep it brief, I'm a writer, I'm an author, also a speaker, nature advocate, and of course, maybe the most important role of all, I'm a mom of two and two biological children and two bonus daughters. Yeah, so I've grown into this role over the past 15 years. I live in Sweden, but I've also lived in the U.S. for 15 years. So the U.S. is my second home. I've written two books, The Open Air Life and There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather. And some people may recognize me from my blog as well, which is Rain or Shine Mama. I've written that for over 10 years. And my passion is, as you mentioned, to inspire people to get outside and especially families with children. I work with my passion as a writer and speaker.
That's wonderful. As somebody who also works her passion every day, it's such a privilege.
It is.
So you were born in Sweden. You live in Sweden now, but you took a 15-year detour to Indiana. I'm really curious about the differences in the two cultures with regard to prioritization of the outdoors. So I'm wondering if you can tell me how Sweden does the outdoors, how Scandinavia does the outdoors, and then tell me, what did you observe during your 15 years in Indiana?
Yeah. First of all, I ended up there because I was married to an American. And so I had my daughters, they were born in Indiana. And I think immediately after I moved to the US, I did notice that things were different. I mean, I was raised in a very outdoorsy culture in Sweden. I was raised with the motto, there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothes. And we were outside playing all the time, and both at like daycare and at school. And nature is really revered as an essential part of childhood. And when I came to the US and I had my daughters there, pretty soon I realized that they were going to have a very different childhood from my own, unless I was very intentional about creating that for them. I noticed that people didn't go outside much, especially not like during the cold season. And there were a lot of misconceptions about outdoor play, especially in like inclement weather. Like people thought that their children would get sick if they were out in the rain or in the cold. And people actually thought I was pretty odd for being outside with my children when it was cold out. I was called brave, and people took pity on me because they thought I was out walking with my children because I didn't own a car. And some people thought I was irresponsible because they thought it was too cold for my children to be outside. So it was definitely a matter of two different worlds. Whereas my friends back in Sweden, as they had children, they let their babies nap outside all year round, because that's another one of those Nordic customs. So, you know, I did the same, and I felt safe and confident with that because that's what I had been raised with. But I noticed in the US, it was just the culture was different. And a lot of parents were really anxious about, you know, letting their kids be outside. And I had one other mom ask me, we both had like babies around the same time. And she said, I can't wait till spring because then I'll be able to get outside with my baby. And I just asked her, why would you want to wait till spring? And why don't you just go outside now? And that was like not even, yeah, it wasn't even, she hadn't even considered that. She just didn't think it was possible. And then also I noticed a huge difference in the whole attitude towards the early childhood education, because in Sweden and the Nordic countries as a whole, there's this emphasis on outdoor play that's really perceived as the most important thing for children to do and to take part in. I'd say for the first set, like 6 or 7 years of their lives, that is considered the most important way for children to learn and engage with their environment. Whereas in the US, there was a lot more pressure for even young children to excel academically. And there were a lot of academic milestones that were pushed like very early on already. Like my daughter had her first homework at age 4, which is like unheard of in Sweden. So that too made for a really different experience.
Yeah. Wow. What an answer. I'm thinking about how life in America is designed to be indoors, right? And even now we're designed to be on screens. And if we're not really intentional about unplugging ourselves from the screens, getting outside, it just doesn't happen. And especially in the cold weather climate, or even in the hot weather climates, let's be frank, whenever the weather is not perfect or near perfect, yeah, we all have a built-in excuse to just go back into our homes and stay indoors. So I'm curious, you mentioned that in Sweden, outdoor education is really prioritized. And you also mentioned, too, you had an outdoor childhood. I'm curious as to why. Like, what are the documented health effects associated with spending time outside? And what benefits did you personally receive from a childhood that prioritized outside time?
There are a lot of benefits that are well documented. Studies on the health benefits of nature really started in the 80s, but they've just grown exponentially in the past 10 or 15 years or so. We know for sure that when we're outside in the daylight, we get vitamin D, or our bodies produce vitamin D, which is key to a lot of bodily functions, including our immune system and bone health, gut health, and a lot more. And daylight is also key to regulating our circadian rhythms, which in turn help us sleep better, sleep longer, and helping us fall asleep at night. Another measurable effect of going outside is that cortisol levels drop. So that's the stress hormones. So those levels go down, which means that we feel more relaxed outside. And also blood pressure goes down. And those are all like very easily measurable effects. Another physical health benefits is that it promotes healthy vision and development of the eyes. We've seen these epidemics, especially in like Asian countries where children are inside a lot. Myopia, which is nearsightedness. And initially, the researchers thought it was because of the screens, so the kids were just staring at the screens. But it turns out it's actually the lack of daylight that's causing it, because the eyes really need that daylight to develop normally. And then in addition to all these physical benefits, I forget to mention, if you're physically active outside, which children tend to be, you also have increased muscle strength. There is improved balance and coordination and core strength, and also healthier BMIs. And researchers have actually compared, they know this because they've compared children who go to so-called forest schools where they are outside most of the day, and children who go to traditional preschools who are more sedentary. And that's where they found these differences. And also that children at forest schools have fewer sick days, so they tend to stay healthier overall. And also sensory development. Nature is really a boon to the senses. When we go outside, we can experience the world through all our senses. And that's really important in the early years too. And then also the mental health benefits. The researchers have seen that children with ADHD, for example, they can focus more easily after they've been outside. And there's also less risk of anxiety and symptoms of depression, which I think is so important today when we're seeing the rates of mental health issues just go up, especially among teenagers and teen girls. I think nature can really be a powerful antidote to that. And then there's also like cognitive benefits. Just the being outside and playing freely can really help children develop their problem-solving skills and creative thinking, things like executive function, which is how well you can set goals and work to achieve them. And also risk management, of course. Nature is a great place for children to practice like risky play, or just play as we call it in the Nordics. We don't really define it as risky play, but yeah. So just like tree climbing or any sort of play that comes with a certain amount of risk for physical injury, and also better learning outcomes too when you combine an outdoor portion. And children are really wired to learn through play. I know there's so much anxiety around this in the US too, with parents constantly questioning schools or preschools that have a sort of a play-based curriculum. The parents are often very anxious about whether the children are learning enough. Are they going to be kindergarten ready? Are they going to fall behind? But children have always learned through play. So we don't need to improve on that process. It's already perfect. It's just a matter of trusting in that process. And that's something that I think we need to get better at. There's been, in the past few decades in the US, there's been, I think, society overall has really, and the education system in particular, has gravitated towards a more intense model where it's all about academic fortitude and getting ready for the next stage. And when all you really need to do is let children be where they are and like meet them where they are. And yeah, trust that they will learn. They will get where they need to be if you just support them in that free play.
Oh, I love that answer. Thank you so much. What a comprehensive answer. As you were talking, I was thinking about how it seems as though the United States, we prioritize cognitive development as the most important piece of the child development puzzle, right? Like we prioritize academics.
I'd say the academic, yeah, because the cognitive development, it's there too in the outdoors. And even if you let the child learn at their own pace, you got to do, there are certain stages that a child has to go through before they're ready to learn all that academic stuff. So like before you even put a pencil in their hands, they need to have those hands in the mud, and they can learn by just like tracing letters in the mud and like counting when they're playing. And, but it's just a whole different thing when they're doing it because they have an innate motivation to learn because it's meaningful to them. It's not just a number on a piece of paper. It's actually a part of their imaginative play. So that makes it more meaningful, which in turn makes it it's a more natural way for them to learn in the early years.
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm thinking about how America tends to prioritize output also, right? Like childhood is the only time in a lifespan for us to not be producers, not be chained to output. And so I'm thinking about how if we slowed down childhood, stopped focusing on the academics so much, let the kids be kids, give them what they deserve, which is a more relaxed, perhaps free-range childhood, not only, as you aptly gave the evidence for, not only are we serving the whole child, not only are we also working towards that cognitive development that we seem to prioritize here in the US, but we're also giving them what they deserve, which is a childhood that's unrestrained and free from that incessant American need to produce. So those are just some things I'm thinking about there. And if you have any thoughts, take it away.
Yeah, no, exactly. I agree with that. And also, I think American society in a lot of respects is a lot more competitive. And I think that competitiveness has really trickled down to childhood, which is really unfortunate because that competitiveness is gonna hit them later regardless. And I wish that at least childhood would be that little window when that wouldn't be the focus. And that's why I like outdoor play, because it's something that children can do without being judged and without striving for like a reward or external rewards. They're doing it because they want to do it, not because an adult is directing them to do it, but because they are doing it of their own free will and because they just think it's fun. American society is very competitive like that. And I think we should give our children the space and time to really just play and trust that that is what's best for them. It really, outdoor play has everything a child needs in the early years. Let them be where they are and not just like constantly running to the next goalpost.
We've been talking about children, but I'm just curious as to whether adults in Sweden and Scandinavia also prioritize the outdoors. And if so, what does that look like? Again, we're all on the technology. So do adults also get outside more often than your American counterparts? And if so, again, what does that look like?
Yeah, so we have this culture called friluftsliv. Open air life is how it's translated. It's a loose translation. Friluftsliv doesn't really have an equivalent in the English language, but it alludes to connecting with nature in your everyday life. So it's all about getting outside on a daily basis, at least for a little bit. And I think the most common way to sort of practice friluftsliv is to just walk around your neighborhood or just going to a local park. It can also involve things like foraging for berries or in the wintertime, like cross-country skiing, or in the summertime, hiking and camping, of course, kayaking, anything, any outdoor activity that is non-motorized and non-competitive. Those are two of the main criteria. So you get around either on foot or on bike or in a canoe or something like that. And this sort of philosophy has been around since the beginning of industrialization. And it was actually, it was a reaction against industrialization and urbanization, because people started to feel like they were getting disconnected from nature. And this was in the like late 1800s. So you can imagine if people were feeling disconnected from nature already back then, what the situation is like today, when we also have like digitalization on top of everything else. So today, when we have like our phones that are constantly vying for our attention, I think friluftsliv is more important than ever. And it is very common to practice friluftsliv in the Nordic countries, not just Sweden, but all of them. And so in your everyday life, I typically talk about three types of friluftsliv. So like everyday friluftsliv and weekend friluftsliv and then vacation friluftsliv. So on an everyday basis, when you're at work, you may not have time for a big hike in the middle of the week. So maybe you just go for a short walk during your lunch break, or go out for a walk after dinner or something like that. And then on the weekend, maybe you do something bigger. Maybe you'll go to the park, bring a picnic, or do a bigger, like a bigger trip. And then vacation, friluftsliv, then you typically try to get further out, like into the wilderness, and maybe go camping for a week or something like that, and go on a longer hiking trip. I think friluftsliv has like really had an impact on our culture. And we also have a lot of nature areas that are easily accessible. But I think that friluftsliv can be practiced just about anywhere. I think it's about trying to find your local green spaces and really try to utilize them. Granted that a wilder space is going to be more restorative to your sort of mental health and so forth. I think we can all relate to wilder spaces being more relaxing when you're away from traffic and people, and you just have the quiet spaces, quiet open or large spaces. But even a short walk in the local park in the city has benefits. It's measurable there too. It's all about getting into the habit of being outside on a daily basis, preferably. And that is a difference, I think, between the Nordic countries and the US, and partly too, because a lot of US cities they're really designed to be traveled through by car. Like the infrastructure is very different. Whereas in the Nordic countries, it's a given that you can walk places or you can bike places, which is not necessarily the case in the US. And there's a big difference between states too, in terms of how much public land is available, how many acres of green spaces. It varies from just a few percent in the Midwest states to Alaska, where it's, I think, something like 90%+. So there's a huge divide between, I'd say the Western US, where there are also a lot of national parks, and some other areas, other states where access to nature areas is more limited. I always tell people to just start where they are and use what they have and do what they can with that. Even if you don't live next to the wilderness, which most people don't, you can still draw the benefits of being outside as long as you just make a habit of it.
You said the very famous phrase earlier in our conversation, so I'll just repeat it. We've all heard it. There's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothes. And I'm sure you're convincing an awful lot of listeners right now, but I'm willing to bet that there is a subset who are listening and they are thinking to themselves, no, there is such a thing as bad weather, especially in this era of climate change. So I'm just curious if you have any convincing words for the people who remain a little bit reluctant.
Yeah, I totally get that. And my thought behind it is, knowing all the benefits of being outside, I don't want to be limited to just the nice weather days. Because frankly, when you live in a place like Sweden, there's going to be more like quote unquote bad weather days than nice weather days. And I just think it's too important to be outside to be limited by the weather. And I also think that this saying it's tongue in cheek. It's never been meant to be taken literally. Obviously, there are times when you shouldn't go outside if the weather's downright hazardous, which unfortunately with climate change, yes, extreme weather events are going to become more and more common. And obviously that's not the time to go out and play, but in my experience, the hesitancy has more to do with I'm not comfortable outside because it's too cold or it's too warm. And to that, I could also say that the human body is fantastic in that it's really adaptable. And we tend to forget that humans have evolved outside for millennia without climate control, including children. So I don't think we would have made it this far as a species if we couldn't adapt. And one way to do that is to be outside and dressing for the weather and being prepared, and adults as well as children. I think it makes us better prepared for what is to come, frankly, because the more we stay inside, the more alienated we become from nature and from all the natural forces that make up the weather. Children have grown up from the Arctic Circle to the desert to the jungle. And for millennia. And I think that the more time you spend outside, the easier it gets. And you don't have to force yourself to, the point is not to be miserable out there. So I totally get if it's 115 degrees outside, because I do get this a lot, especially maybe more from people in warm weather states than cold weather states, because you can always put on more clothes. But when it's hot out, it can be more challenging because you can only take off so many clothes. So I sometimes get that comment, I bet you never spent a summer in Texas. No, I haven't. But I sit in a sauna for 2 to 3 hours every Friday, and it's 200 degrees in there. So I know what the temperature means, but I don't mean that you have to be outside. You shouldn't be out doing an extraneous hike when it's 100 plus degrees. It's all about adapting to the weather at hand. And that's an important skill to have too, I think, to know what your limits are. Unfortunately, there are some hot or cold weather related deaths because people haven't been prepared. So that's a problem. So I think having that sort of mental preparedness and being prepared clothes wise, and also adapting your activity to the weather at hand. If you do that and you also do it with a positive mindset, I think it could be life-changing if you do that. I don't think that. I know that because I've heard it from so many people from over the years who have read my book and have changed their lives around and made a habit of going outside. And they just describe how much better they feel from getting that fresh air every day. So I think once you try it and you make a habit of it, I think it'll stick.
So many thoughts there. You mentioned our American affinity for climate-controlled environments these days. That makes me think about the fact that we have a cultural emphasis on comfort here. We have to be comfortable at all times. And if we're uncomfortable, we have to manipulate our surroundings so that we get comfortable. That's a quintessentially American trait that I think we all might benefit from challenging, yeah. Frankly.
Yes. And that's very much part of the Friluftsliv ethos as well, that you do challenge yourself physically when you're outside. Because again, research has shown that humans actually, when we do push ourselves, we actually become happier. When we subject ourselves to some of the challenges that our ancestors phased, it's actually good for us. We need to push ourselves both physically and mentally, and an open air lifestyle can really help with both.
I have one more question for you, Linda, and it has to do with, it's not changing policy, but perhaps maybe just getting others on board. I'm thinking about my daughter's elementary school. They have recess time, but if there is even one drop of rain, it's indoor recess. If the temperature is below some predetermined number, which in my opinion is not that significant of a number, like it's not that cold. If the temperature drops below, they go inside. Even gym class. So they have gym class once a week. They are only allowed to go out for gym class twice in the whole year, which just boggles my mind. And so I feel like, you know, I can do all of your suggestions in my own home. I can prioritize getting outside with my children. But if the forces that be outside of my home are not also embracing the outdoors, and if other families, my children's friends, let's say, are not prioritizing outdoor time, I'm fighting an uphill battle at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
I hear you. Like I can so identify with what you're saying, because I fought the same battle for years. And it is tough, but I think it's a battle worth fighting. And actually, I did write about, you were talking about outdoor recess, and I just wrote about this on my Substack. 40% of American elementary schools have eliminated outdoor recess, and many more are considering it. So it's discouraging. And I know that institutions can be hard to influence. You can always control what you do in your own family, but it's harder to influence institutions. So I'd say try to educate, I always recommend people that try, and maybe you can find at least one teacher. A lot of times there will be one or two teachers at each school that are more open to taking the students outside. And I think during COVID, when some of the schools actually ended up moving the classes outside, there we saw a bit of an opening. Unfortunately, I think I was hoping that that would stick, but I think most of it has probably just returned to pre-COVID, to how it was pre-COVID. But try to find allies within the school, and maybe give them a copy of my book. And you can also try to point them to other sources of information. And I share some links in that Substack post to some organizations that national organizations that specifically advocate for outdoor recess. So that's one way to try and advocate for it. And at the same time, just try and do your thing at home. And I think we need to try and do both at the same time. That's how I always try to do it when my kids were younger. I knew they weren't getting outside of school. So to me, it became even more important to get outside after school. And in a way that was positive, because it really pushed me. It forced me to go back to my roots. I'd never even considered myself a particularly outdoorsy person before I moved to the U.S. I was just being an average Swede, where that's just how it is over here. But when I moved to the U.S., I realized I really had to really embrace that identity and really elevate it. And I just became so much more engaged and invested in getting my kids outside. And in a way, that was a positive thing. I really got into camping with them and doing things like that, which I hadn't done for several years. There are some organizations with lots of resources. So for example, the Children and Nature Network is one that comes to mind, but there are several others that are more focused just on the recess issue. And then try to find allies in the school and see if you can organize, if they would let you bring in a speaker, or try to give them educational information, and just try and do that sort of education. Because like I said earlier, there are so many misconceptions. And so I think the education part is a huge part of it.
What I like about your answer there, Linda, is that it's a reinforcement of the fact that we don't need to just be, we don't need to just be swept away by the way that things have always been done. We can actively seek out people who perhaps want to do things a little bit differently. We can find our tribe and we can advocate for, again, maybe trying things a different way. I'm thinking about the parallels between advocating for more outdoor time at schools, let's say, with delaying giving kids smartphones. Like, that's a movement that is very slowly starting to pick up in my community. Wait till 8th. And just because everybody's giving their kids a smartphone when they get to sixth grade does not mean that's what we all have to do. If it's not aligned with our values, if we want to see things done a different way, it often just starts with speaking up and saying, hey, wait a minute. I love the parallels there. Linda, what a conversation. Oh my goodness. Tell my listeners where they can find you, your books. Give us the details.
Yeah. For my long form writing, yeah, do subscribe to my Substack. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook if you want more of a personal or a peek into my like personal life and personal reflections, some snapshots over there on social media. My blog, rainorshinemama.com, is still up and running. And my books, yeah, you can find them online anywhere where books are sold. So yeah, stay in touch. And I so appreciate you having me on here today.
Well, again, thank you for coming. I will link to all of your stuff, all of your locations, all of your books in this week's show notes for easy finding, you listeners. And thank you so much, Linda. I really enjoyed connecting with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Listeners, that's a wrap. My friends, show notes at mamaminimalist.com/510. If you listened to last week's show with Bailey Van Tassel all the way to the end, you may have heard the homework. Your homework is to watch the documentary on Netflix, now streaming, titled Buy Now. Watch it and then email me or DM me your biggest takeaway, something that shocked you, something that made your mouth hang open, just something from the documentary viewing that really hit home for you. I am doing my best to get the filmmakers on the show for an interview. And so I would love to hear your thoughts. Thank you to the dozen or so of you who have already done so. So if you haven't yet, your homework, watch Buy Now on Netflix and write to me your biggest takeaway. I will hopefully, fingers crossed, get it to the filmmakers. I think that's all for now. Again, if you like the show, you got to support it so it sticks around. Really simple. If you like it, you got to support it. Thank you so much. I'll see you soon. Reach out if you need me and take care.